Greetings and welcome to the Reasoning with an Optimist podcast for the week of November 15th, 2015. This is Jack Brissett Mills. I've had such amazing people to talk with so far, and another one today, Ariel, today. But first, the verses I wrote for Rudolf Steiner's Calendar of the Soul, week 33. This one I wrote 2 years ago, verse 33. Though strange to say, I feel the truth of our necessity. My soul, yours, connected to the world. The spirit of the world comes alive, sees itself through our eyes, is conscious through us, would die cold, alone, without our spark. And this one I wrote last year for the same verse, 33a. I have thought such a thought that the world all this time has been counting on me, on us, to ensoul it, to lift it into consciousness, give it open eyes to witness its beauty. Yeah, so here's our conversation. I won't say anything else with Ariel. I hope you like it. So I don't know if you've heard any of my conversations on the podcast yet.
I have. I did. I listened to a handful of them, and they've been wonderful to hear.
Nice. So you know the idea. I mean, we could just talk about what you do or what I do, but if we could talk about why we do what we do or how we do what we do, I think it would be more universal, more elevated in a certain sense.
Sure. Yeah, you know? I love that.
And whether I don't know that interviews are really the best thing. I'd rather if you had something to talk about, you would tell me or... You know, I have so many questions I could ask you, but I don't really want to burden you with my questions. Do you have something you wanted to talk about in the first place?
Well, one thing that really resonated with the kind of idea of the podcast and that just sort of kind of caught my attention, as it does relate to my life and all of that, was kind of the idea. I love the idea of listening in the context of the work that I do with domestic violence survivors. So it has been kind of percolating in my brain in that context, but I love being asked questions. So I would be more than happy to be on the receiving end of that.
Me too. But, I'll do you the favor this time and then you can do me the favor some other time. You know, I see you doing so many things, helping others. You were standing up with the detention center people and the hunger strike this last week at Hutto. Yeah. And I see you with the people with not feeling gender freedom. They're suffering from peer pressure from our backward or not quite forward society. You help, like you just said, with... is it a suicide hotline and then also domestic violence hotlines?
Just the domestic violence hotline. That's my job that I do 40 hours a week is with the domestic violence hotline. Yeah.
And, you know, when I think of someone like you who's doing so much, when I think of my own life and what I do for others, I help the people I see directly by being a nice guy and I'm smiling. You know, I help them that way.
Yeah.
And I've been a teacher before, so I help people that way. And when I pull up at the corner and the cardboard person is there, I always take it as my turn, and I've always got cash handy. You know, but how does a person help as much as you do and also have their own life? Of course, your job apparently is helping. You're being paid to be on the hotline by the state of Texas, I guess. I'm not sure who funds that. But
yeah, it's actually the Violence Against Women Act, but yeah.
Wonderful.
And a lot of private funders and things, yeah.
And so do you have a clue how it is that you are so socially conscious and the rest of us are not? I mean, how does that work?
Oh, gosh. Well, it makes me, I have a lot of reservations about framing my life that way, because I think it's so incredibly easy for ego to just get completely
definitely.
Like wrapped up in that.
Definitely. I mean, you don't want to dwell on it, but if someone's asking you, do you think, I mean, for me, it's either genetics, your parents are this way, or environment, they raised you this way, or a past life. You've been here so many times, you're a very mature soul, you come back, and just naturally, of course, you help people. What else is there to do? You help people. That's the most obvious thing. And the question should really be, how come you're not helping people? If you were asking backward to me, I wouldn't be able to understand how to answer that myself. So,
it's a kind of overwhelmingly.
We're trying to be elevated here. So go ahead.
I mean, it does feel natural, I guess. I think it just, I haven't been able to imagine life without that.
Yeah.
But I think that I also really think it's important to see helping and seeing connecting with other people in every facet of our connection. So I do think that, you know, viewing it as your turn every time somebody asks, or even as those small, you know, monetary donation or just kindness on a daily basis, I think that's actually the harder work, right? Because,
I guess,
you know, what I still struggle with is those moments of kindness when I'm angry, when I'm burnt out, when I'm stressed, when I'm hungry.
Right.
You know, I think that's where a lot of the most difficult work happens is, you know, in those moments when, you know, as they say, when nobody's looking or when, and so I think that, and this is kind of a question that I do carry and I do struggle with, is that I really want my intentions to be really pure in the work that I do. And I think it's, you know, like I said, I think it's very easy for ego to get really wrapped up in our identities as helpers. And so I think there's something very actually self-serving in that it kind of quells like an existential anxiety to feel like, well, this is a place in the world. This is where, like, this is where I find meaning.
Yes.
And so there's something very self-serving about it, I think. And then, of course, I have, thankfully, a partner who really helps me think through these things about, like, how to do this stuff with intentions that are have integrity and purity and aren't for recognition, aren't for...
Yes.
The latest, you know, being able to post the Facebook link that gets a lot of likes, you know, all of those things, I think. So I think there's actually, the hardest work happens when nobody's looking and when it isn't necessarily framed as helping.
Yep.
Yeah. Being kind when I'm hungry. angry.
And I suppose the more you help, the more you have opportunity to help.
Absolutely. I mean,
every group you go to, if you go to one protest or one march, you're more likely to go to the next one and the next one.
Yeah. And that's what's been really wonderful, is that this has become community for me. So it's not that I get home at the end of a long day and I'm like, oh, I'll get back up and do something really hard. It's that I have... these people have become woven into the fabric of my world. So when I, you know, it definitely is a snowballing kind of thing. So I actually love to stay up late, you know, doing posters for the protest, or, you know, making, you know, inviting people to the thing. And so actually there's a lot of joy in that, because it's where my friends are. So
definitely,
it's not just altruism.
Definitely. No, of course. I mean, everyone has an ego. We have to battle it every time. I mentioned recently how I avoid looking at myself in the mirror, because of course I love myself so much. And but I guess everyone has the same problem, and either they don't worry about it. I mean, I try not to worry about it too. I try to just do the right thing, and if I happen to feel good, that's a side effect. It's not the goal. Mm-hmm. Like, my goal is not to feel good.
Yeah. Like,
my goal is to help and to do good things. And then the side effect is that I feel good. I suppose that's your way too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really, I do resonate with that a lot, because I think, it's the idea of not doing all of these things is actually more scary to me. In the sense of like, because like I said earlier, it kind of quells an existential angst. So it is really self-serving in that sense, and that like, it feels right. It feels like the right, you know, way to spend my energy. And so it kind of puts a certain line of questioning at ease. Not that I ever want to fully let go of like questions of purpose and my role and connection to my fellow human beings. But I actually think it's a really huge privilege to have the time, have the money. You know, I don't have kids. I'm not struggling to make ends meet. And so it's actually a huge privilege to be able to spend my time in ways that that kind of scratch that deep itch in my heart, you know? So,
right. Boy,
I think it's actually,
Have you thought of this idea? I kind of stumbled upon it when someone said that they honor vegetarians so much because they're not eating animals. And I have trouble with that too, because I say, well, why can't we stick up for plants and say, how can you possibly eat these living plants? And I only eat minerals. And then can't someone stand up and say, no, the minerals have been here forever. How could you possibly eat them? And so really, where do we draw the line? I suppose that as soon as we're conscious, as soon as we're 21, 28, we can actually say, look, I'm not going to go along with this system you've got running down here where everybody has to eat everybody else. I'm not going to do that anymore. I have too much compassion for living things, and I don't feel that I deserve to live at the sake of someone else. And so, I mean, that's the extreme point of view, where you would say, okay, I'm not going to go along with this whole system. This all screwed up from the very beginning. You can't make me eat anybody. I'm not going to eat anybody else. I'm only going to breathe, and maybe even that is, there's beings in the air that don't want to be in my lungs. You know, maybe even that, maybe I can even have a guilt over that.
Mm.
You know, if we really look at it, every moment of our life here is a debt.
Yeah.
It's a debt to some other life. And so we have to do something to alleviate our feelings of taking here. And so you are doing the obviously correct thing. You're doing everything you possibly can. I believe you are doing everything you possibly can to alleviate the sufferings of the world. Go ahead.
I think that really resonates, because I'm talking to you on an iPhone, you know?
Yes.
And I have moments of just mortal, you know, horrible guilt, like, oh my God, you know, because I've read the articles about where those minerals came from. And so I think that's such a poignant and difficult point of like my whole, you know, looking at the candle holders that I bought, you know, I mean, everything has a story inside of it that's really painful and really interconnected. And sometimes it does feel like we're all just either, I don't know, barreling down some horrible, you know, path, or, you know, going down on a sinking ship. And I think it is really hard to find that, like, that balance. And I guess one way that I try to grapple with it is a sense of capacity. You know, understanding that there is no human way, no actual logistical possibility where I could, like, do everything, you know, like, and so just trying to find those limits and where I can still do what I'm doing with joy and with an actual open heart. Because if I really start doing things out of a sense of panic or a sense of profound guilt, then it's not genuine.
No, it doesn't work. No. You heard that great story from Mother Teresa, where someone who didn't help people they came up to her and said, how can you possibly do what you do? There's so much suffering in the world. How can you do it? And she happened to be standing in a place where there were people on the street in need, and she answered them. She answered them by bending over and comforting the person at her feet. That's what she does. She doesn't think about the rest of the world needing something. She helps the person at her feet.
Yeah.
And you and I, or at least you do this, you don't have to go overseas to help. I've been impressed by that about you too, that I should say that you were my student back in high school. I remember you being the smartest kid I had in the class. It was so amazing to be your teacher, because obviously you know more than I do by a long way. Anyway, that you don't go over to the far, far distant place to help. You help in your own neighborhood. There's suffering everywhere at your own feet. Anyway, I've always thought that was a very wise thing, that we don't have to go somewhere else to help out. It's all around us.
It is, absolutely. And I think there's a whole, the more degrees of separation we get from our own darkness and our own pain and the pain around us, like, then it does become more and more like about image and glamour and things like that, which is not to say that there isn't a deep, deep importance and urgency to thinking globally and thinking of like
Definitely. The
intensely tragic ramifications of everything that's far beyond us. But when it comes to like, taking like a tourism, like, you know, those, what are they called? Like voluntourism
ecotourism, voluntourism.
So volunteering abroad, trying to, you know, that misses a certain point of like, clean up your own mess too, you know, but at the same time, I think it is really important to sit with like the urgency and the existential terror of like the grand scale of everything too, and just kind of understand with humility like what we actually do have, you know, control over, which is not to say we don't have control over buying iPhones and, you know, all of these things, but looking at, you know, impact and but I think it is important. I struggle constantly with that. Like, I don't want that idea of, well, I can only do so much to ever be an excuse to, like, not be vigilant, you know, but right. just realism,
Boy, I wondered if there was a person who said, boy, I would love to help, but I don't know anyone or how to do it. Of course, that might be a way out. What I would suggest, maybe I'm hoping you can have a suggestion too. What I would suggest is to, next time there is a sit-in or a protest, you see these things in the paper. Maybe in the paper it's too late because it's 2 days ago, but I guess that's one of the best things about Facebook, is that it shows you current protests. Occupy movement, I brought several things down to the city hall. I wasn't strong enough to sleep in the bushes myself, but I was strong enough to bring my sleeping bag down and give it to some people. And I suppose if you start at any point, if you start volunteering like that, you will then see, you'll then find the next thing to do. You can find the next thing. What would be your suggestion for getting started?
I think that sometimes, like, what I've learned, because I was really fortunate. Like, when I started, I had no idea where to start. This one woman who was a dreamer, you know, the undocumented youth who, and so she came to my college, and she just, her little speech just shook me to my core, and I was like, oh my God, I have to do this. And so it was actually some time before I found where to plug in. So I started asking around, and my friend just happened to have a friend and he was involved in things, and I sort of, you know, tried to meet him, and then it was a slow process. And I think it's important to understand, like, I think we are very used to instant gratification and all of those things. And so it wasn't like that day I signed up and I was in, which I think a lot of groups try to ride off of that energy at a thing. They're like, okay, everybody sign up now, let's do this now. But, you know, also when it's a genuine commitment, sometimes you're willing to like wait some time and do a little bit. And so it was just very gradual. And the person who I met ended up being my wonderful partner now. And so I have, you know, just really privileged access to a lot of these groups. But anyway, sorry, long roundabout way to come to my point, which is that I think that I've recognized that where I am most useful, because I'm not undocumented, I'm not an immigrant, I'm not the person who the struggle belongs to. So really some of the best things I can do are like exactly what you said, you know, giving away your sleeping bag or whatever. In my case, it's like buying pizza for the meeting and then going back home. You know, yeah. I'm not going to be in the meeting with the immigrants who get to drive their own destiny and determine what they want and need to do next, but I can buy pizza. And that's one less thing that they have to worry about, you know? And so, yeah. That's the whole concept of allyship. Yeah.
There you go. And when you show up with the pizza, if you did show up with the pizza, then you would see the next thing you could do, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I suppose what was curious to me when you said it was the very first moment of what you said was something to do with an interest in something. You had an interest mm-hmm. in helping, or you heard mm-hmm. the dreamer, and then mm-hmm. you had. So first of all, before anything, you were interested. That's probably the hardest thing, I suppose. Many people don't even have that very first spark of interest, and because as soon as you think of someone else, you right away realize what you have that they don't, and that what you have to help them, even if you don't have more than them, you have the ability to do what they need. Right away you can see that. The people on the corner, you see right away, these poor people, that's so hot. I pull up. My main reason for giving them money is then it opens the door to conversation. So once you give them some money, then you and they can talk. Until that moment passes, they're asking and you're avoiding or whatever. But then as soon as you give them something, then you can talk. And so you see, what do they need? Their shoes are miserable. They have no hat. The sun is so hot. So the next time you come around, you give them a hat or it. So the first moment is probably the hard part, where you open the window when you're interested in helping. Yeah. And how can you get, how does a person have that? Is it born in them, or how can you cultivate it if you didn't have it? That's a mystery to me.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and that's when it really plagues me, because my senior project in high school was trying to like identify those people, like trying to be like, who are those people who manage to not just coast off of that little wave of excitement once in a while, but actually threw themselves into it wholeheartedly. Like, that was my senior project at Waldorf, was like trying to like identify what sets them apart, what enables them to have that stamina or that interest that persists. Uh-huh. And I still don't know, you know, but I think what a lot of it is I think it's a little bit overly glamorizing or romanticizing to say that like there was a moment and everything changed. But
it might be that, though. It might be something like that.
it might. Yeah. I don't know. But I mean, also like I was, I have just been gifted and just showered with so much love throughout my life. Like, that was a building process. It wasn't just one pivotal moment where suddenly a light went off or everything changed. Like, I was nurtured. I was shown, acts of love and generosity my entire life. And so that felt very natural moving forward, was like, this is how people treat each other. This is how we attend to one another. And so that's not something that I had any control over or that I can take any credit for. It was just a really gentle and genuine generosity that I was surrounded with.
Yep. There's this great postcard. It has an older woman laughing and a middle-aged man laughing together. And the caption says, "Good parenting lasts for generations." Because your parents, maybe your parents were well brought up, and you are well brought up, and then your kids will be well brought up. And so someone way back when got out of the dog eat dog kind of a mold that many people are brought up in.
Yeah.
And so since that moment of breaking with the past, I think we all start out with, from a violent background. We've come from hunter-gatherers and warriors and afraid and holding on to what we've got. And so somewhere along the line, someone stopped that pattern. And they had, they opened their door to strangers somehow, and they realized this is how to live. This is actually how to live. And then eventually it came to your folks, and now you realize that that is actually the better way to live. You live a much better life that way.
Well, and I think it's, I definitely agree, and I think to just kind of complicate that a little bit too, and like, you know, kind of add another dimension. I think it's interesting because also some of the most, the people with some of the most integrity and power to be there for other people, the two who are coming off the top of my head right now are my mom and my boyfriend, and both of them come from histories of pain, you know, histories of trauma. And so it's interesting because it's like there are also those who somehow, you know, transform or digest that pain and, I don't know, make it soften them or something, you know. Somehow there's also the people who, I think it's condescending to say despite the odds, you know, not that, but it's like somehow even with or because of or why ever, you know, whatever the relationship is to their past, they also, you know, come into the world with this profound generosity and integrity. So I don't know. I don't have an explanation for that one.
No.
But, you know, it's interesting.
I mean, there are some people that you have to say there must be a pre-birth existence because they came much better prepared than I ever did, you know, or much more mature. They say the most mature souls are the gardeners for the the lesser mature souls who are the millionaires. I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me that the persons, the souls that have been here more often are happy serving others. And those who've only been here a short time really want to gather and pile up the fortune for themselves. I don't know. It's all a mystery to me, but I like to pretend, I like to pretend I think I know what's going on, but it's, anyway. But I congratulate your mom then and your boyfriend for, or your fiancé, whatever, for breaking the, I think it's much easier to grow up, maybe this is not true, I think it's much easier to grow up with a conscience if your parent, if your parents have both been loving, caring people. But again and again, we see these who've been torn away and they have a single parent home and violent backgrounds, that they're the ones that actually are more compassionate. It's very odd. You can't, you can't really know.
I don't know. I don't know if there is a formula or what it is, but it's certainly a question that I think is so compelling and so interesting because I think also it's also like a pragmatic question. It's like interesting in its own, but it also, I think for me has again, a little bit of urgency in that, like, if we want systemic change, if we want generations who don't hurt each other after us, you know, like, I think it also has a deep, like, pragmatic urgency to it. Also, I want to know, like, what's the recipe? How do you churn out those, you know, those kids, you know?
Yeah, that would be the next, but, you know, that would be the next step for someone in your position. You're helping individuals at the moment, but then you figure out a way to get others to help individuals. So instead of you helping one or two or three people a day, you're helping a dozen people or 100 people to help one or two or three people a day. So, and suddenly, I mean, community organizer is the old word for that, or, but then... how does that happen? That's training. Yeah. That's a teacher training kind of a business.
Well, one of my favorite things, and I've only gotten to do it a handful of times, but one of my most, like, beloved ways of being in community with other people is, like, through little knowledge shares. So I don't know why I don't do it more often because it's just so electrifying and exciting, but just bringing, like, people together. Because I think we're so used to getting information you know, with the knowledge share, like, we're so used to getting information through experts, you know, through the people with the credentials and things like that. And one of the most exciting things, and I think it's kind of connected to like the Frere tradition of like popular education too, of like community knowledge share, where people just come together and whatever lights them up, whatever's passionate, whatever their, you know, master's thesis was 20 years ago, or what they do at work or something, they bring that to the table and just share with other people out of this like raw, genuine, authentic passion with each other. Just like, even if it's just a cool book that they read, like, hey guys, this excited me so much. Like, and there's something so beautiful and immediate about getting to feel somebody else's passion like that and just learning from each other. Because what that came out of was like my moments with my friends were like, I'm like, I'm surrounded by these awesome people with this, they're just overflowing with enthusiasm and creativity and thoughtfulness. And so that's one of the coolest moments that I feel like I've been able to share with community, is like when just, you know, 10 of us come together and just do little presentations, you know.
So like a 5 or 10 person group.
Yeah, very exactly.
Nice.
And so
very nice.
Yeah.
I mean, they used to be, I mean, in my youth, it was teach-ins. And really not having a teacher, but people all being equal, trying to work on maybe a problem of civil rights or women's rights or something. But these ideas could have been called coffee houses, maybe, or afternoon tea. I mean, we've had these kind of little things, but instead of talking about the neighbor, you talk about what excites you. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, and I think that's exactly what you're sharing with people, you know, by doing these conversations too. That's what's so just compelling and exciting and awesome about it, is that my mom always told me, like, one of the biggest gifts you can give somebody is like your attention, you know, your attention and your interest. And I think that this moment's like these, like what you're, you know, kind of cultivating and curating in these moments is like that exact kernel of, you know, human connection and people being excited about each other.
Have you thought of this idea of a thesis for yourself? Did you hear me talk about that once?
I did, with Maria. Yeah, with Maria Victoria. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think you have to have the answer, but have you thought about the question, what would be my thesis that I would defend over my next 60 years? This is my thesis. And I mean, you don't have to answer it, but if you had a beginning, what's your outline for your thesis? I mean,
that's awesome. I love that question, because it is something that there's sort of like phases in my life where a little thesis does emerge. I think one of the things, and I always just return to my mom. she's so awesome. And I think one thing that I tell her always, like the biggest gift that she's given me is this kind of combination of like optimism and continuing to learn. So like I view her as somebody who, no matter, you know, she embodies the, you know, fall down 9 times, stand up 10, or whatever it is, you know, where she's just persistent, just totally doggedly committed to learning, and she takes this humility of never pretending like she's at the summit, you know, never pretending like she has all the answers. And so that's something that, for me, I think I love this Rachel Carson quote that I'm bad at memorizing stuff, but this one I was like, this is going to be the one that I memorize. It's like, she says, if I had the powers of like the fairy godmothers when a child was born, the gift that I would give is a sense of wonder so indestructible that it would last a lifetime.
Wow.
And so that's something that I think Waldorf really helped me with, was like a sense of wonder and an openness to, like, no matter how painful things are, and it's okay to like rest with that fear. Again, I keep talking about existential fear, which I guess is a big theme in the work that I do, but like, you know, it's okay to like rest with that. It's not about being fake in our optimism, or like pretending like things are okay when they're not, because I think that's one of the gravest like pitfalls that we can have, is pretending like things are okay when they're not. But having a really humble sense of openness and optimism and constantly learning, you know, because I struggle with that because I'm a know-it-all and I, you know, a little old for my grade. And so I was developmentally always ready for the questions that teachers throw, you know, threw my way. And so I've always kind of overly identified with knowing stuff. And so that's been a powerful lesson coming from my biggest role model, my mom, you know, about just being constantly curious, constantly questioning, you know, and open to other human beings. Because God, you know, she has every excuse to be pretty shut down and angry at other people and mistrusting. And she's one of the most, she truly like attributes, you know, benign intentions and truly, you know, sees people for what they are inside of themselves. So
well,
my
smart
mom, I guess, is right.
Of course.
Of a lot of that thesis. So.
I mean, throughout history, the smartest people have said, I know nothing. the very smartest people. So, I mean, it just goes, and there's nothing wrong with that. The more you know, the more you realize this is an amazing place. I've got so much to learn. Well, that's a lovely thesis. Go ahead.
I was thinking about, that kind of bittersweet and kind of complex, like, experience of excitement and wonder about the world. Because what I experience at work is, like, it's very dark. It's a very dark sort of work. And I experience, you know, secondary trauma and, like, you know, it really does affect the way I view the world. I'm hypervigilant about, like, you know, seeing abuse where it's not happening. And so I experience a lot of, like, symptoms of that. But what I realized one day is, like, I was heartbroken one day. Some stuff had happened in my personal life, and I was just, I was so sad. And I just felt like, oh, my God, I don't have anything to give, but I had to go to work. And I found that, like, it was in that moment of, like, me being heartbroken and me feeling really sad and lonely that, like, I was so much more, like, responsive to the suffering of the people I was talking to. And just understanding that, it's not even just about, like, being like, yeah, things are okay, you know, and then moving forward, it's like, you know, complex and like also finding the wonder and the kind of bittersweet beauty of like suffering too, not to glamorize it, not to romanticize it, because there really is, you know, horror out there. But kind of reminds me of Khalil Gibran or somebody who talks about, you know, the suffering kind of carving us out to be bigger vessels, you know.
Of course, you can't really help anyone who's suffering if you haven't suffered. The best people to help are those that have gone through the worst suffering. Those are the ones you want to talk to. And so I suppose every call you take and every bit of suffering you do in a secondhand way, you become a better listener for the next person.
It's also complicated because there's also, I think, again, back to that capacity issue, there are also days where I don't have any more. I literally don't have anything else left to give. And those are the most complicated. Those are the days, thankfully, it's usually like the last couple of minutes of my shift, but some days I'm like, I actually should not be in this position right now because I am at capacity. I am so burned out. And so, you know, that's when, you know, we have to have, again, humility and a sense of integrity to say, I am not fit. I am not fit for this. And it would be arrogant to pretend like I can serve this person right now.
Boy, I'm so thankful you are there. Thank you for doing that. And do you think it's worth saying to the general public, look, if you think you're capable of helping those who suffer, please call la la la. I mean, to become what you are, how do you do that? I mean, do you go to school? Or do you, how do you become what you are doing as a job?
Some of the most like well-equipped people are not the ones who have, you know, the most degrees. Although I think it would be false to pretend like school doesn't have tons to offer, especially if you're there to greet it, you know, with an open mind and a willingness to do that work. But I think we have to like rework our conceptions of what it means to help people, like I said. And so, I don't know, I grew up in a tradition where like it was a lot, I went to this church where it was like a lot of it was like work on yourself first before. And I love that, But I also view it as an excuse sometimes.
Yeah, you could go. Several lifetimes later, they still haven't helped anybody. They're still working on themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if I just meditate and if I just treat my dog really, really well, then like I'll reverberate out, which is absolutely true. But that has to be combined with an engagement with like the world around us too. So I don't know. I mean, I just think that like I was never pressured to help, which is why I feel really conflicted about trying to rally people and there be like, come on, do this, you know?
Of course.
Because I was never pressured. But I think it is about, like you said, it is about having a passion for something. And, you know, I didn't have such a dire need when I was growing up that I was like, you know, needing like a lot of certain kinds of like charity or, you know, assistance or something. But it was even the people who like helped pay for me to go to camp or like, you know, even those little acts of generosity were so meaningful. And so finding things that people do resonate with that make them feel excited, you know, to connect with others, I think is really, can be powerful on a lot of different levels.
I do think, now I asked you a silly question. I think a person should rather just, if they have any interest, they should help the first person they see who needs help. And then from there, it'll grow. There's a person walking down the road and they seem like they need an umbrella. You give them an umbrella, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it starts somewhere.
Yeah. And I think also like being willing to ask really difficult questions is really important too. And that sounds kind of flippant or trite to just kind of be like, ask hard questions. But like, seriously, like one thing that, again, I just, apparently my mom is just the perfect example for everything I want to say. I learned about allyship and like white privilege and straight privilege and, you know, cis privilege and all of these different kinds of privilege. And, that really started to kind of shape the way I interacted with the world and understand my position in relation to other people and how that meant that I need to step back in certain places and like, you know, check myself in certain places. And I just think it was so cool because my mom, you know, that's from a totally different generation. She was like really excited. So we just like pinned that stuff up in the bathroom, you know, about like asking ourselves, you know, those questions and constantly checking in with like, how am I, you know, affecting the people around me? And those are not passive questions. They're really trigger a certain engagement with other people.
Excellent. Yeah. What a great role model. Thank you. Please give her my greetings. Please give her my greetings.
Oh, I will.
Thank you so much for talking. I hope we talked about anything you wanted to talk about. I hope I didn't cut you off anywhere.
This was the coolest experience. You really did, you know, really feel so extraordinary, you know, to be heard and to be cared for and to have our interests listened to. So thank you so much for that gift.
And I would
be over the moon to talk again anytime.
Thank you. And if you think of anyone else or if anyone asks you, please send them my way.
Sure, I certainly will.
All right.
Thank you so much, Jack.
Oh, yeah.
Take care.
Wonderful, wonderful. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Thank you, Ariel, again, for all you do. And thank you for listening. If you wish, and I wish you would, send me a line. Go to my website, reasoningwithanoptimist.net, and we can connect. This is Jack Brissett-Mills. Bye-bye.